Salofa Lava, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Suisuiki. Coming up, there's heavy police presence in Solomon Islands as counting gets underway post-elections. Also,
and I really believe they need to be putting survivors first.
A Pacific abuse survivor is calling on the Pope to apologise. And
we have a problem with too many dogs, stray dogs back home.
Kiribati struggles to control its canine population. The counting process for Solomon Islands joint election is only just getting underway as the retrieval of ballot boxes from polling stations all across the country continues. Electoral officials, local police and regional personnel providing logistics support worked through the night to ensure some tallying could start on Thursday for constituencies closest to central counting locations. In the first post-election updates on Thursday morning, Electoral Chief Jasper Anisi said the public will notice a heavy police presence at counting centres across the country. He's urging Solomon Islanders to remain peaceful and remain calm to maintain good order around the counting stations. I spoke with our editor, Koroi Hawkins, who is currently in Honiara. Kia ora, Koroi, counting is underway. What else happens next?
Yes, so the counting process here for the Solomon Islands joint election will start with the provincial ballots kicking off first, and then the national votes will be tallied after that. But there are two electorates, the two provinces for Choiseul and Western Province, which will have national MPs, and we'll be waiting for those to come through, including for the former Prime Minister Manasseh Songuvare, who's contesting in East Choiseul.
When will we know of the results for both provincial and national elections?
Yes, so the Electoral Commission here will be announcing results for the provincial elections three times a day. So they're doing it at 10 a.m., 3 p.m. and 10 p.m. local time. And for the national elections, they will be announcing results as they come in. So as soon as the result is declared, they will come on live and they will declare that and they will announce that. And anyone overseas following this can also get those live streamed results from the Electoral Commission website and Facebook page.
You spoke with voters, and while there were various responses, what's the overall feeling? Is there a mood for change, or are they satisfied with the current government?
It's really hard to pick. A lot of the voters that I spoke to wanted change, but then that's only a small proportion of the voter base. And I'm only in the capital, Honiara. The voter base in the rural areas will have a different perspective on the government and what it's done as well. So in terms of election issues, the service delivery, basic government services, health, infrastructure, were some of the things talked about. Some people wanted more done personally for them from their leaders, and others were even talking about the switch in diplomatic ties in 2019 from Taiwan to China and being unhappy about that. So it's quite a variety of different election issues that were important to voters this time round.
How are the security arrangements during the counting of the ballot boxes?
Yes, so there's a high police presence at each counting centre in Solomon Islands. As it gets closer to when the results are announced, people actually gather physically outside the counting centre. It's something that's been done historically, and we're getting reports from around the country of people starting to mill around counting centres and wait for the results to be announced. And there's usually some massive celebrations and a bit of parading, similar to what we saw in the campaign period once election results are announced. So for the security side of things, what police will be trying to manage is the size of those crowds. And if those crowds clash, that's winning candidate supporters clash with losing candidate supporters, that's when things can really get set off. So everyone, official in any capacity, is just calling for calm and telling people to please respect the process and acknowledge defeat gracefully and allow the democratic process to take its course.
A survivor of abuse in faith-based institutions says the Catholic Church should not be using media as scapegoats when making a formal apology, and called for a proper in-person apology through a formal redress. Francis Tangaloa suffered sexual and emotional abuse between the age of 5 and 7 by a Marist brother during the 1970s and has waited 22 years for an apology. The abuser was Marist brother Bede Fitton, also known as Francis Fitton, who taught at the Maris Brothers Intermediate School in Ponsonby, Central Auckland. He has since died. Alicia Foon spoke with Francis Tangaloa during a sit-down interview where she expressed the importance that survivors must come first.
So the first that I'd heard they wanted to apologise is when the Catholic Church approached RNZ about wanting to apologise to me, which I was angry about and quite insulted, because it doesn't seem appropriate to go to the media to apologise to a survivor. I would have preferred that they had come to me personally to apologise. So I heard that, and then Carl McDermott from our Survivor Experiences Service then asked them what, you know, emailed them about what it was that they were wanting. But then, you know, the story hit Radio New Zealand on the Monday before we had heard anything from the Catholic Church. And then it was a few days later that they sent through an email with an apology. I just don't think that's an appropriate way to apologise to someone. You know, if I'm going to apologise to you, I don't firstly go to the media and then send an email saying sorry. You know, that's not appropriate. I would have preferred, I guess, that they approach me personally and that we discuss how an appropriate and meaningful apology could happen.
So you've only received an email, not an in-person apology or talanoa or any kind of expression to meet in person?
No, I actually haven't been able to read that email. So even hearing that the Catholic Church wanted to apologise was a shock to me, because 22 years ago I approached the Catholic Church about an apology. And then again during the Royal Commission of Inquiry, and I hadn't heard anything. So it was a surprise that they now wanted to apologise. But of course they were called out in the media, and so that's possibly why they wanted to apologise. I would have preferred, like I said, that they'd come to me in person, because for me an apology should be in person, and I would love to have my family present, because, you know, this abuse didn't just happen to me. The impacts were on my parents, on my and my husband, on with my children as well. Whānau and extended whānau have been affected. So, you know, when an apology happens, I would like them to be present. And I'm still open to that. I'm still open to meeting with the Catholic Church and sitting down and explaining what a meaningful and appropriate apology would look like to me. Mm-hmm. I guess the other thing that I would encourage for survivors out there who are possibly in a similar sort of like me, are waiting for an apology or for redress, I would still encourage them to wait for the new redress design system. I just want to reiterate that, because that just the protection and the support for survivors will be there, more so than what they have now, and that's incredibly important. And also, if there are survivors out there who would like to share their story, you know, I really want to encourage them to come forward to the Survivor Experiences Service. Like I said, we are for survivors, and we will help them listen to their story, and if they would like some help to navigate next steps, we can refer them to the right services that we think can help them. So, yeah, I'd love to encourage them to still come forward to the Survivor Experiences Service.
How would you, I guess, like the Catholic Church and the Maris Brothers to be held accountable following the way everything has played out?
In my situation, I would firstly love to see the Catholic Church, Maris Brothers, sit down and actually talk to me about what a meaningful apology could look like. that's the first step, to put the survivor first and listen to what we would like. Because for every survivor, it's different. Redress and apologies look different for every survivor. And then going forward, I would like to see a new redress system put in place by the Crown Response Unit, and that be the system by which survivors, myself, can come and help get the help and support for redress and for an apology.
Do you believe that redress is an important part of the healing process? I guess it's difficult to put you in this position, but when it comes to the Crown not having this set up already, how long will survivors have to wait, considering that they have this space where they can tell their story? But when it does come to a redress system, why is that not in place now?
Exactly. We need it. Survivors need it, and actually agencies and institutions need it. They're not doing redress well. So the Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse and Care will have their final report coming out this year, and that would be a huge catalyst for getting the final details to what a redress system design should look like. But the government is looking at redress at the moment, a redress system, and the Crown Response Unit is involved in designing that. And so, yes, we need to know what that looks like. We need some action. We really want that system set up.
Kiribati continues to grapple with an uncontrolled population of stray dogs. The mayor of Tarawa, Baraniko Baro, was in New Zealand's northern region earlier this month to consult pest control specialists on practices to reduce the stray dog population. Mr. Baro told Whenau Whenua the number of stray dogs in Kiribati are increasing, a trend which is leading to more complaints of dog attacks.
Could you describe the purpose of your visit?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, we're here to learn how the Whanau District Council manage and control dogs, because we have a problem with too many dogs, stray dogs, back home, and that's why we are here. So I'm here with the three other enforcement officers or complying officers, trying to learn as many things as possible in managing and controlling dogs.
How much problems are these dogs causing in Kiribati? How many stray dogs do you know?
I cannot count. We just cannot count the many stray dogs that we have. Because so many roaming around, and although we're trying to catch as many as possible, I think there are more newborn ones, puppies, coming up rather than the number of dogs we caught.
Is there a dog refuge?
No.
What's being done to resolve the?
Yeah, the council. That's what we are trying to reduce the number, and we are learning quite a number of things here about dog traps, dog cages, that we are going to try and implement back home. Visiting all the houses, if they have stray dogs around their houses that they don't keep, then the council will try and take them.
And are these stray dogs causing problems? Are they biting children?
Yes, yep. Biting, not only biting, but shitting everywhere. You know what I mean? They shit here and there, causing a lot of health problems to the community. Yes, and very soon we're going to carry out the dog traps back home, the cages, to put in as many villages as possible, so that the councillors and the staff concerned are going to try and reduce the number of dogs, the stray dogs. We intend also to work with the vet to try and de-sex the dogs, both female and male.
These traps, how do these traps work?
They work very effectively, I must say. And they are not that complicated. They are simple traps made of galvanized pipes and a mesh wire.
I see.
Just to catch the dogs.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple and iHeartRadio. From myself on the RNZ Pacific team, till fa soifua.